This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Outdoors Podcast, your Northeast destination for hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation. I'm Chris, your host, and on this show, we break down the science, strategy, and real-world experience behind life in the woods and on the water. The goal is simple: to educate and empower the outdoor community to make informed, responsible decisions in the field. So grab your gear, tune in, and let's get after it. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Thanks for joining us back here on the Wing and Tail Outdoors Podcast. I hope everyone out there is doing great. I hope you're all excited for the holiday weekend, America's 250th birthday. I hope you guys all have great and exciting plans and you enjoy your weekend. And most importantly, that you're safe and you're able to spend it with your friends and family and those that are the closest to you. I got to be honest, I feel like it's been forever since I've recorded an intentional intro. And the truth is, because it kind of has been. As you guys know, we've been doing a lot of, my wife and I are in the process of moving. We're selling our house. We're moving back to Jersey. And there's a lot of moving pieces with that. Obviously, as far as if any of you have ever moved before, you know that there's a lot that goes into a move, especially when you're moving to a different state and multiple hours away. It's kind of hard to get everything done all at once. But along with that comes the struggle of honestly trying to find a place where I can record more quality podcasts. The room that I'm in right now, I designed it as my studio. The back wall has been painted for those of you who have seen the videos with a nice, you know, mountain backdrop. And this was kind of my space. You know, all my podcasting stuff is in here. My arrow building stuff is in here. My ammunition reloading stuff is in here, which we're going to talk about here in a second. So as I move through this transition, essentially what I've been doing is Dorge and I sat down in the early days and we recorded basically a podcast a week. And there came a point in the podcast where I stopped airing them right away when we recorded them, simply because I didn't want to become redundant and everything on the podcast week after week being about the exact same thing or, you know, the same type of stuff. So what I started doing was every few episodes, I would pull from the archive and drop in that next Fire Knock episode. However, with this move and not being able to record consistently week to week, I'd been pulling some of those episodes out of the archives and posting them still in the order that they were intended. Just I haven't had the time to sit down and record something else. So over the last few weeks, you guys have heard a couple different episodes with Dorge. I believe we jumped back on the Knox. We picked back up where we left off with Knox. Last 2 weeks ago, I believe I posted the second episode of Knox and how they're made and how they function and what's good about them and what isn't. And this week, I pull the next episode out of the archives and we go into talking about lighted Knox. How do they function? When do they fail? The pros and cons of different types of designs. And then we talk, of course, also about Fire Knox, lighted Knox, because the lighted Knox are what started the company. You know, he named the company Fire Knox because the Knox were red, the lights were red. You could see red for miles and miles. He got the name Fire Knox from the Knox. It's really what started the entire company. And the name Fire Knox comes from the glowing red fire appearance of those knocks when they're lit. And then as time progressed, you know, he started developing and patenting other ideas and concepts and components and the whole nine, you know. So this episode is a really exciting one. I enjoyed it. I always learn something new when I sit down and talk with Dort, and I hope you guys do as well. Now, before we get into today's episode, I do want to give you guys some updates on some of the things that we've had going on here at Wing and Tail Outdoors, how the food plots are going, you know, the bow shooting, the surgery recovery and all that good stuff. I feel like I haven't really had a genuine opportunity to speak with you guys and catch you up, if you will. So first things first, as this episode, I believe, is either going to air on Thursday, July 2nd or Friday, July 3rd. Next weekend, July 11th and 12th, there's going to be a big archery event in Roscoe, New York at the Roscoe Mountain Club. They've paired up with the archery shop known as All Things Archery in Liberty, New York, or out of Liberty, New York. And it is a two-day event, July 11th and 12th. There's a 100 3D target course. There's a money shoot. There are raffles, you know, buy and sell gear, all that good stuff. I have no partnership, no relation with either the club or the archery shop. It's just really cool when we see a bigger event like this come to the area. A lot of archers across the country are always super excited when the TAC event comes out and when the schedule comes out. But for me, in the area I live in, I have to drive 4 hours in any direction to get the closest TAC event. In the past, the R100 has come through New Jersey. This year, unfortunately, they weren't able to make that work, and the R100 did not come through New Jersey. So getting a larger shoot like this to come to our area is a big deal. I'm going to try my best to get there. And if I do, I hope to see some of you guys there. I think this is a good segue into my current archery shooting status and all that good stuff. Unfortunately, my hand has not recovered as quickly as I thought it would. I'm still lacking a really good amount of grip strength in my left hand, which as a lefty is my draw hand. But luckily, I don't feel any issues or pain or problems when I'm drawing a bow. Truth be told, I haven't shot very much in the last month with this move. I did have to leave my job at the archery shop, which is where I did most of my shooting. So I'm just trying to find somewhere local that I can get out and shoot, even if it's just for a half hour, and figure that out. But yesterday, I did get an opportunity to shoot my bow for the first time in a month, give or take. And I got to tell you, that Sicario, the PSE Sicario, is just such a beautiful bow to shoot. It has a super smooth draw cycle. When you get to the back wall, it holds nice and steady. I will say, as you drop down in let off, so from 85 to 80 to 75 to 70, the bow does lose a lot of that valley in the back, but that's by intent. It's intentional. With my grip strength and everything where it's at, I had the bow at 70 and let off, and it shot very well, but I wasn't able to handle the bow very well with, you know, everything that I have going on. So I bumped that bow up to 80%. It's still shooting 307 feet per second. It's more than I could have asked for. At 20 yards, it's shooting beautifully accurate, and I'm hoping that this coming week, I'm able to get out and at least get my bow sighted out to 60 yards. So that way I'm able to shoot that event next weekend if I have the time to get out there. Along with the bow comes those A3 archery strings, which for me are just doing absolutely phenomenally. They look great. They function very well. I gained 2 feet per second by putting those strings on my bow. So a bow that was already blazing fast gained even more speed just by putting some quality strings on. And if you guys listened to the A3 archery episode from a couple months back, we talked about the pre-cycle technology and how over at A3, they have a very unique, very different method for stretching the strings. And if you listen to that episode, you hear that instead of it being a static stretch, it is a dynamic stretch. So they're stretching the string as it's working, which allows those threads to get as compacted as possible. And it gives you the tightest, smallest, least air resistant string possible. And that's where that extra speed comes from. Along with the A3 strings, you guys know that I've upgraded all of the hardware to titanium that I could. That's all the nuts, the bolts, the screws, the string stop, my axles, the limb bolts, everything that I could switch over to titanium, I have. And it has made the bow literally completely dead in the hand. On shot, there's just one thud. And it's dead. There's no sound. There's no vibration. And you can even hear the very faint of the arrow going through the air. That's how quiet the bow has become. I'm very, very pleased with the bow. I'm very pleased with the accessories that I've put on it. If you guys are interested in any of that stuff, there's a link to FireKnock and to A3 Archery down below in the description, along with any codes that I may have in there. Next up are food plot updates. I've posted a couple videos and updates on those food plots as spring has come along and turned into summer. But truth be told, I haven't had a whole lot of time to get to the property, boots on the ground, and physically see with my eyes what's going on there. But back in March, Dave Hoy and I, Dave is the owner of Integrated Habitat Solutions, also a partner of this podcast. And we frost seeded the annual clover blend from Vitalize Seed into a little bit of standing snow. And when that snow dried up and the ground kind of dried up a little bit, the clover popped very quickly. It just took a little bit of time to, quote, take off, if you will. But once it did, we had a beautiful clover stand. It looked like a beautiful carpet going across most of the food plot. I won't say we had 100% coverage. We still do have some weeds that we're competing with, but we have less weeds than last year and more clover coverage this year than we did last year. So my goal from year to year is to see progress in the positive direction. And with the Vitalize system, we're seeing that. We planted carbon load last year. We had really good rye green up as it comes up and tries to generate seed and then, you know, ends its life cycle. And about a month ago now, I would say I planted the Nitro Boost, their summer blend of their 1-2 system, and also fertilized it with no-till nurture. Since I've planted the Nitro Boost, we have almost daily activity in our food plots from the deer. Mind you, we don't have a massive deer herd. So there are days, even when we have apples and food plots growing and all that stuff, there are days where we don't get deer on camera. It just is the nature of the beast. But from what I can see from our food plots, we have 2 to 3 foot standing crop or forage or whatever you want to call it in the food plots. Things are growing in very, very nicely. And the deer are just loving it. Before it got really tall, we had turkey in the food plots every single day. This year, unfortunately, with everything going on, didn't have the time to get in the turkey woods. But now we have 3 years of data of when those turkey like to show up. And I'm really hoping I could capitalize on that next year moving forward. But as summer turns into fall, we're looking forward to the Nitro Boost really coming in, giving us some really tall growth that we can lay over, terminate, and give a really good layer of protection for the carbon load that we're going to put down. And we're really looking forward to having our first year where everything in the food plots went smoothly from spring to summer to fall. And I have to give thanks to Mitchell Shirk of the Pennsylvania Woodsman podcast, Al Tomechko of Vitalize Seed, and Dave Hoy of Integrated Habitat Solutions. All three of them have been really great resources of just helping set this up and implementing it the right way. I've mentioned this before that our goal with our food plots is to try to have as little non-organic or non-natural inputs as possible. I'm not against organic inputs, organic fertilizers, foliar sprays, stuff like that. And the beauty of Vitalize Seed is everything that they use for the most part is organic based. So I don't feel guilty putting those fertilizers in because they're intended to be there in the first place, you know? So if you guys are still in the market looking for some fall seed, I encourage you to check out Vitalize Seed, what they have to offer. And if there's something on there, if you can't find something exactly like what you like, give Al a call. His number's right there on the website, and he'll be more than happy to help find the best blend or seed or whatever the case is for you and your application. Last but not least, we have Tooth of the Arrow broadheads and arrows. Last year I shot the 85 grain 4-blade vented broadhead, shot phenomenally well for me. This year I'm looking to test the 100 grain XL broadhead. That's going to get me to 400 grains on the nose. Personally, I don't like to be below 400 grains when I'm hunting. So we're going to give them a shot and see how they do. But more importantly, Tooth of the Arrow is now making arrow shafts as well. They have pre-built arrows or pre-fletched arrows, and they also have bear shafts that you can order. Off the top of my head, I believe they have a bolt, a 246, and a 204 diameter arrow. Off the top of my head, I can't remember if they have a 166, but you can head on over to their website and check out what they have to offer. All of these companies are offering, or most of these companies, I should say, are offering 4th of July discounts. So definitely check out their websites and see what they have available to you. I've pretty much talked about all of the partners of this podcast. I got a few that I didn't mention, so I'm just going to mention them here real quick. We have the Nested Tree Stand System, Rack Getter Sense, Hunt Arsenal, Silver Birch Archery Shop in Milford, Pennsylvania, and the Hunter's Gallery in Hamlin, Pennsylvania. We got some discount codes available to you guys. You can scroll on down to the bottom and hit those links in the description. You could use any codes that are down there, save you guys some money, and it does help to support the podcast here. Again, I'm sorry for the inconsistencies with the podcast. I'm doing the best I can to stay with it and also take care of my priorities at home. But any of you guys that are married or have, you know, priorities at home, you all understand that at some point you got to put the priorities first. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do right by my family, trying to do right by my wife. But I'm also trying to do right by you guys because your support has kept this podcast going. And I want to make sure that that wasn't in vain. So I appreciate you guys for sticking around through this intro. It is a longer one than I usually like to record. But more importantly, I want to say thank you for sticking with me and this show through this little bit of a rough patch. And once we get back and I have a place set up to record, I'm going to return to bring you guys the quality episodes that you are used to. Actually, a little teaser, next week we have a returning guest coming on to talk about the importance of fawning and paying attention to your fawns and very close detail to your fawns in different ways. As fawns are dropping, as we're moving into summer, and then again when we get into spring. So definitely be sure to tune in next week to catch that episode. That's all I got for you guys. Thanks again. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. Without further ado, Dorch Huang and Leyden Knox.
What's going on, guys? We are joined again here today by Dorch Huang of Fire Knock. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
I'm doing great. And by the time this episode airs, which who knows when it's actually going to get posted, because you know, and the listeners know by now, I mean, we have probably 7 episodes stored up ready to post. So we have like a backlog of episodes.
If you can send it so that we can put on our Facebook page, our YouTube, Fire Knock TV page too.
Yep, exactly. And as we record this today, it is Wednesday, May 14th. Like I said, I don't know when it's going to come out, but I am 4 days away from our daughter turning 1 month old. And it has just been, a little bit of a roller coaster.
I know. It's the beginning of an exciting life.
Yes. You know, we talked a little bit off air, you know, before we started recording today. And it's been, like I said, it's been a bit of a roller coaster. Some days are good. Some days are a little rougher than others. You know, some days she wants to sleep all day and she's awake all night. Other days she's awake all day and she sleeps all night, you know, and we never know what day we're going to get. You know, so some days
that's
I wake
up parenting. Part
exactly.
Parenting.
And, you know, some days I wake up and I'm refreshed and I got a good night's sleep and other days I haven't. But I got to be honest with you. I got to give, you know, 95% of the credit to my wife. Actually, she's on the other side.
That's usually what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, that's recently I called the mother.
100%.
And you happen to be called the father.
Yeah. You know, right on the other side of these mountains behind me is the nursery, you know, so right.
Oh, we'll keep it low on volume.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest with you. We've kind of talked about it and, you know, we want to try to, no, you'll not be excessively loud, but we want to run the vacuum cleaner. We want to talk, you know, I have the arrow saw that I'll run sometimes when, you know, even when the baby's sleeping, just because we're not going to be able to put our lives on pause for forever. You know what I mean? So eventually the baby's going to have to sleep through that kind of stuff.
Yep. It has to. I mean, in some way then you'll live with it because your life, yes, in some way that she is going to be the center of your life, but you can't just run around her totally, 100% on every single subject, on every single matters.
Exactly.
That's it.
Now, I gotta ask you this question because I don't know if it's just me or if this is something that happens to all fathers when they become a father, but suddenly, in literally a blink of an eye, I suddenly feel like I don't have enough time. And I don't mean enough time to, like, you know, do my hobbies and do that kind of stuff. I mean, all of a sudden, I feel like life isn't long enough anymore. Like, there's not enough time for me to do everything I want to do. You know, and I just keep thinking, like, no matter how long I'm here, I feel like I'll never be here long enough. And I'm always going to...
Oh, don't worry.
You know?
On top of that, you know, so you have also one problem. You know what problem?
What's that?
Your first kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what every parent would do, everything for the first kid. And then when the third kid come along, it's like...
Figure it out.
The next one it is when we move on.
That's great. So today, we are continuing our conversation on Knox. On our last episode, we talked about Knox in general, how they're made, the industry standard of how Knox are made.
Yes.
Kind of the... I don't want to say the flaws. I guess technically they're flaws in the way they're manufactured, but... I don't know if that's exactly the right word, but we talked about the issues that arise from regrinding and recycling material.
It's normal. I mean, everybody does that except me. Because It's made up cost benefit and how much are you willing to pay? And what product are you willing to make? I mean, just like I would say, I always use the typical sample. The price of a Bentley and the price of a Honda Accord. They both got four wheels. They both got steering wheel. Why does one cost $250,000? Why one cost maybe just under $30,000?
Attention to detail?
No, the choice of material, what you are willing to pay, and what you consider acceptable.
That's fair. And I can promise you, you're going to find things in a Bentley that'll never be in a Honda.
At the same time, but in a Honda, whenever you're in Bentley, at least not the new one. The new one is a Volkswagen.
Yeah. So today's episode is going to build on that conversation of NOx that we had. And today we're going to talk specifically about lighted NOx.
Uh-huh. And that's again, a subject that I think I'm the expert of.
I think so. With a brand like FireKnock, I think we're getting somewhere. So what we'd like to do is we have this structure that we've been following with all the episodes up until now, right? Where we kind of talk about the history of lighted NOx, when they began, and the progression of whatever it is from the beginning to current. And then we talk about, you know, the benefits of whatever item we're talking about. We talk about the flaws of the components. And then we usually end the episode talking about your version of whatever that component is and talking about how your version fixes the issues in those problems. So
I will give you the entire history of FireKnock, of LightKnock.
Let's do it.
The first LightKnock come out about 1970s.
Really?
Yes, it's called FireTel.
Wow.
It was originally nothing more than a battery, because the reason the light that comes out, because everybody recognized that is finally a light power source, which is based on a 425 size and 420 or 435 size battery, which, believe it or not, I believe it's the president of Mr. Tsuchiya, which in America we call Panasonic. In Asia, it's called National. The guy loved fishing. So he wanted a battery that will go into a bobber. That's the reason the 425 battery was made.
And the 425 battery is that cylindrical looking battery that we see on...
Let me give you an idea so you know, understand how the number pin come by. For 425 means that the OD of the battery is 4 millimeter. The tip to the bottom is 25 millimeters. And the 435, of course, you add that extra 10 millimeters.
10 millimeters, yep.
But it's not a third, because the 425, the 4... A 425 or 435 battery, you got a pin of about 3 to 4 millimeter long. You got a head that's about 3 millimeter to 4 millimeter long. So right on the get-go, you're 25 minus 8. You only got 70 millimeter of actual usable space for battery chemistry. And the battery now I need to go through all this because you knew as we go on, you find out this actually had a lot of major, major issue because of the battery.
Now, I'm sorry to cut you off, but before I forget this question, you said that the first lighted NOx was made in 1970. When was the first compound bow made?
I do not know. I actually never did that research.
Because I'm curious, because I guess the question I'm getting at is, were lighted NOx made for traditional archers first?
Originally going into aluminum arrows.
Okay.
Definitely, they're really big. They're machined and they got plastic casing and so on.
Gotcha.
It's called a FireTel, F-I-R-E-T-I-L. That was the first one. The reason they make it because they finally got a battery source.
So 1970s is when the battery size, something that was usable as far as a battery was
correct.
Was created.
And of course, they did try to use a button cell and go to 6-volt. That was a total disaster.
Okay.
Because, before that's another one. But that one using two button cells, but actually up to three button cells to give you that 4.5-volt. But you know what they use? They use miniaturized incandescent miniaturized light bulbs.
Little baby light bulbs.
Right. Gotcha. What happened when you shock baby light bulbs?
They explode.
No, the wire broke.
Oh yeah, yes. The filament. Yep.
So that was not long lived.
I gotcha. So single use, if you will.
No, you can use it a few times, but eventually it'll break.
Gotcha.
But that one originally went on the very, very, very first one. That was using the filament and a stack of batteries. Any battery, you know, hearing aid batteries?
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, if you imagine, you put three hearing batteries, how lightweight you think that's going to be?
Not at all.
So that is what the first version of LightKnock that was patented in 1978, I believe. It was a little bit later, of course, the 425 or 435 battery comes on. Now, the reason I go into this detail about the 420, 425 and 435 battery, because you need to understand how this battery functions. This battery is nothing more than an ordinary button cell board battery elongated. That means that, remember when you hold a button cell, the fat part, the outside part, when you flip on, you say positive, right? And see the middle part, you got to about the plastic, they say that is your negative side. Now convert that into a pin battery. So the pin itself is negative while the casing is positive.
Okay, so the little thin antenna looking thing is the negative side.
Right, and the outside of the net casing is positive. Now, you're going to see a lot more stuff when we talk about all the problems and chemistry and so on. You need to understand the fundamental of what this battery give and not give you. And Panasonic at that moment come with the lithium fluoride battery. It is a superbly stable battery. Its shelf life is about 200 years, but you only have 25 mAh on the 425 and 30 to 33 mAh on the 435.
And the mAh does what now?
Microampere hour. Total amount of battery capacity.
Gotcha. So essentially,
today, hold a Panasonic AA battery, have 2,000 microampere hours in it.
Gotcha. Okay. So it makes it, puts it in perspective.
Right. So you only got about 2% of it.
with anything, right? Something comes out, it's usually big and bulky and kind of, you know, clunky. And then
remember, it's a super stable battery.
Sure. But as time goes on, they find a way to make it smaller and more efficient and we continue.
Right. But then the next one that comes up is a similar form. That this time got an LED. What it does is that when you shoot it, you let the battery, because battery got weight, you will go backwards and engage the wire. Now the light is on. Then the light will sharp fire, arrow fire all the way. And you hit the target, then you disengage yourself.
Okay. Now we're going to talk about this later, I have a feeling, but is this kind of where you got the idea for how your NOC functions?
No. Then we go into the next generation. There's about 8 different patterns in right now, and mine is about the 7th, okay? Then, of course, Luminar got a pattern, it's 2 wires, okay? Mm-hmm. Before that, you got a Japanese guy using the same battery, but except it got a capacitor in it. That means the moment you shot it, you engage it, then the capacitor will now slowly fill up and then shut off. That's based on the G4 sensor with a capacitor. That means the lightning will fly, hit the target, eventually it'll shut off.
So it's got a built-in timer, basically.
No, it's built-in capacitor. That means that is based on the amount of electricity being filled up by the capacitor, and it shut off. Okay? Then of course, Luminar is nothing more than 2 wires. Then you come along the tracer. The tracer is a 435 battery or 25 battery, depends on which version. And you went through a read switch. That means that when you've got a piece of magnet, you're passing through this. The read switch is nothing more than 2 pieces of wire suspended in free space, probably no air, in a glass cylinder. As the electricity passes it, it'll cause one or both of the wire to bend and it'll touch each other. That's what a read switch is.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay. Never heard of that before.
Mike, that's what a tracer is. The tracer was actually original designed by Wayne Simonson out in Texas. He's a pilot and he made the lightning out. I helped him out a little bit. And then, of course, the next version after that will be the FireNOC, which when I patented, I did not, because that was my first. The patent that is, I work with my own on the design and on all the things. You know, most patents have 2 or 3 independent claims and have 10 dependent claims.
I didn't know that. I do now, though.
But now, I should have split the final patent into 7 patents.
Awesome.
Because I have 14 independent claims and 60 dependent claims in the patent.
Wow. So you split it into 7 and had 2 independent claims per?
Yeah. Because okay. I'm that much designed into one product.
I gotcha. And putting it all into one would be?
It will be about, remember, every time when you pass the 2, every independent claim you pay half the patent fee. I did not know that.
Oof.
And luckily, I was happy to, because it was my first patent with my own money compared to my previous patent that usually pay for the either the investment firms or my partners. You know, I'm the guy who designed Power Over Ethernet,
mm-hmm.
which back then I designed it, they called it a simplified computer device. I'm also the guy who designed the bank reconciliation and check clearing on computers.
What does that do?
It allows you to do internet banking.
Internet banking. I got you. So like the apps that we use for like our banking
The concept of the app that you use.
Okay, I got you. Wow,
you got the app because at that moment I designed is using a modem system to talk with first Chicago and then do the checking, clearing, and so on.
Okay.
Yep, I designed all those, but those back then is all my partners and my investors. They pay for it and then put my name on it. So if you want to know more, just type Dodge Wong at USPTO. You'll see all those.
I swear, man, there's nothing you haven't had your hands in. I'm telling you. That's amazing.
That was a few part about the final patent days. And then, of course, after that, you got the so-called nocturnal patent.
Mm-hmm.
But the nocturnal patent never stands because it was not an original design. It was actually a known design out of Australia.
Really?
That's the reason the nocturnal can't stand. That's the reason there are so many copies of the entire approach because it was known, so it can't stand.
I gotcha. All
right. Now, what's so special about the final patent or the final design compared to others is that you need to address all the major issue of a lighter knot because a lighter knot is not just simply when you shoot it, it turns on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens? You shut off. Or do you want to shut off? How do you activate it? How do you make sure you activate? In what form you activate? I mean, of course, after that, there's a few really big attempts of quote-unquote lighter knot patents, and they all may be issued but can't be used.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an idea. You use Bluetooth. Most of your customer or listener were, and you have used Bluetooth headphone, right? You use cell phone, right? What happens if you put your cell phone on your dashboard in summertime? What happens to your cell phone?
It overheats.
You overheat and you shut off. What happens when you put your iPhone, your Bluetooth headset in your backpack when you're hunting in the middle of winter? When it goes below, say, 20 degrees. What about actually not even at 40 degrees? What happens to it?
Starts to run slower and then it'll eventually just turn off. Yeah.
How come they all shut off?
I would imagine it has to do with something with the acid in the battery acid.
The battery chemistry, not acid. It's the cathode and anode issue. Because every single chemistry have a certain temperature range that you had to work with. I know I'm going to go deep and detail into all this, but I want to give you some basic fundamental material so you understand.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
For any true computer, that means any computer run on a clock and a logic, it needs an absolute known voltage. Otherwise, you don't have this logic coming up anymore. So for most computer that known to this world, it use, especially in the consumer handle portable products, answer is 3 volts, negative 3 volts, and zero. And the beauty of 425 is a 3-volt battery.
Mm-hmm.
Is it really 3 volts? That's the real question, isn't it?
You're saying, does each battery run at 3 volts exactly? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Gotcha. I'm going to assume not.
No, it's not. And not to mention, when you use the same, that means every chemistry, and every temperature, the voltage is different.
Yeah. Which I would imagine causes trouble, because if you don't know how much energy or power you're working with. Yeah.
Right. I mean, just like your basic lithium manganese oxide battery, which is where everybody will buy fishing bobbers. Those are lithium manganese oxide chemistries, which is an open chemistry design. That means the dielectric and the cathode and anode system always would utilize the air surrounding it, which in the old days on a 425 battery, you only got 25 mA. But the lithium manganese dioxide with the same package at 100 is 600% more.
Yeah.
But then problem, it's interact with air. The shelf life is 9 to 14 months max.
Okay.
That means when you made it, you got 9 to 12 to 14 months and the battery is dead.
From the moment of manufacture.
Correct.
Which I would imagine is the problem with the lighted knocks where you can't replace the battery or the battery is internal because it has a shelf life and once it's done, it's done.
Correct. Then I went through the same process. If you say I'm going to go with the Panasonic or the lithium fluoride battery on the sealed condition, you got 25 mm. If you run a computer system and listening for the signal, when is your lighted knock ever shut off?
I would imagine when it dies.
It never is. Until it dies. You've got a computer always working for a signal. So if you don't understand this process, you go and pick a battery and then you solder the battery on a circuit board and you sell it.
And that's that.
You bought it in, say, February. You manufacture in January. When is the sucker going to die? That means the battery by itself, it's going to last until November. But since it's got a circuit board, it's going to die in September.
So it'll die before you even get a chance to use it.
Right.
Right. So there's how do I want to put this? There's a couple different types of or styles of lighted knocks, right? You have the ones where, like you said, you shoot them and they, you know, they stay lit for a certain amount of time and then they just turn off and that's the way they're designed. There's other ones where
that's
you shoot
like the finite target system. It got an average of 17 seconds, it shut off by itself.
Then you have other knocks where you shoot them and you have to flip a switch or press a button or do something.
For those are generally like a battery. Take the battery out, you engage your battery.
Sure. But then there's also some lighted knocks, like you mentioned Luminoc, for example. Luminoc has, if I'm not mistaken, I think they use the same battery you do, except
it's 435. The battery is actually 50% bigger.
Okay. So their battery gets soldered to the circuit board.
No, they do not. They actually stopped that in 2012.
Oh, good. Good. I'm glad.
So
I'm
they
glad
can
to hear that.
The battery can be replaced, but unfortunately, because it's based on a plastic design, the moment it's like every plastic, you can engage it. You do it, engage a second and third time, the plastic is gone.
Yeah.
That's the reason when you use the fine knot, the moment you put on a circuit board, or you take it out of a knot, out of an arrow, you should always replace the knot because you can't trust plastic on memory.
Yeah, I mean the especially with the heat. You know, if there's a change
in heat,
the
impact, the cold.
Yeah, I was going to pull out a battery, but I don't have one with me now. We can.
No,
get
not
to that
a problem.
Later.
But anyway,
we've talked. Are there any other types of like? Because there's literally hundreds of lighted knocks out there.
You still haven't got why I'd be so keen on the battery so much.
Okay.
Because you need to understand what you're dealing with before you can do the next step. You remember when I told you each of the battery have its optimum temperature to give you that 3 volt. If a lighted knock is a computer based design, you will only operate in that temperature and that temperature only.
And what's the other base? So if it's not a computer based design, what's the other type of design?
A computer have a so-called strict logic. Then you can go into what you call a fuzzy logic system. And third is 100% mechanical.
When you say logic, you're essentially talking about like the coding within the, or how the, like what tells the
battery.
Remember,
code has two forms. You can physically code. That means it's a software. You need a program to understand it. Or you can use the capacitors or a lot of ICs and you make them work in a certain form. Just like you need, before computer happened, we got VLSI. We got logic circuits.
Yeah,
with timers.
I mean,
if you understand, before computer happened, every single traffic light have logic in it, but it's a rotating clock logic.
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes sense. Traffic lights came before computers, right? Okay.
It's nothing more than a clock. It's running, it's a mechanical piece when the time had by being a chime or whatever you insert it, do different things. What do you call it? It's a mechanical computer.
So the reason I'm asking the questions like I am is because I foresee, like when you get into computer science, that for a lot of people sounds like gibberish, right?
Yes.
So I want to try to make sure that we're trying to explain this stuff in as layman's terms as possible, if that makes sense.
Right. That's the reason now. Remember, I start with the battery.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very specific why the battery is so critical. Now, there is about 30 different chemistry on a 425 size. Some of them are ridiculously expensive. And yes, you can make 425 battery that will function in negative 555. Like what we offered in the final BX battery. It'll function between 30 degree to negative 55.
Wow.
Yes. But don't put all that you have to maintain the battery in dry ice. And the temperature cannot exceed 30 degrees, or it will just blow.
Wow. And that's a special battery just for
those
super
are
cold
customers who want to go to say you want to go to Alaska for your mascot, your polar bear, and so on, because your basic battery is not going to function at negative 55.
No, of course not.
And
sense.
Then, of course, with the Panasonic BR battery or the new open BL battery, which is a lithium fluoride battery, it will function at 180 degrees Fahrenheit, but you will stop functioning around 40 degrees.
Okay.
So, and the final BR battery, which is a lithium fluoride, manganese oxide is the open design. It will function between, the maximum is 100 degrees. When you pass 100, you have no more power because the dielectric is gone.
So what I'm hearing so far then is one of the issues that we have with standard lighted knocks on the market is they either come with a certain battery installed or they have it on the side and you can install it yourself, but they only offer one battery in a one size fits all type of fashion versus where you at Fire Knock, you say, okay, if you're hunting extreme cold, you need this battery. If you're hunting extreme heat, you need this battery instead. Or for the mass majority of people, this battery is going to cover your typical really cold in the north, but really warm in the south, but not excessive.
That's the reason. Normally, we offer two batteries, which are BL, which will operate from 40 degrees to 180. The other one, the BL, that will operate between negative 700.
Negative 17 to 100. I think that covers the range of most hunters.
Yeah, but remember, a lot of people don't understand. It's like, oh, 100 is dope. We never go above 100. I say, are you sure? Imagine you got a battery in turkey season or early deer season. Your arrow shaft is under the sun. What's the inside temperature?
It's probably, I don't know what the temperature is going to be for sure, but it's going to be over 100. And it's going to be very similar to the phenomenon of your car, right? You know, you're right. It's 80 degrees outside, it's 150 degrees inside the car. And, you know, yes. I know. And sidebar, I had that issue happen with my bow twice now. When I was when I was younger, I left a bow in the trunk of my car. I go to the range, I go to shoot. At 30 yards, I'm missing, like, I shit you not, like 3-4 feet low. And I'm going, what in the world is going on?
Because your string and your limbs are all behave differently.
It was even worse than that, George. My limbs delaminated. All the laminate popped off my limbs. There was no structural integrity left in the limbs. So luckily, you know, it was Matthews has a lifetime warranty on their bows. So they covered it no problem. Then last year, I had the same thing happen with my current bow, but it wasn't the fact, nothing happened to my limbs and nothing like that. What ended up happening to me was, we talked about this, because the riser is made out of aluminum and I have titanium parts, and then the metal that's on my sight is different than the metal that my bow is made out of, and everything heats and cools and expands and contracts at a different rate. And my sight was just, it moved just enough expanded at a different rate that I was missing about 6 inches at 20 yards. So now, seem like that big of a deal, but it's a pretty damn big deal.
Right, because see, most people don't understand, when you're hunting in the middle of the winter, the thermal shock of your hunting equipment can exceed 100 degrees. You think I'm exaggerating? No. Most people, like my mother-in-law, they would set the house at 80 degrees. When you walk on a hunt at, say, close to zero in the middle of winter, you got 100 degrees now.
Yeah, practically. You know, my issue, so my bow, for the most part, sits out on my porch all year. So whatever the temperature is outside basically is what my bow is sitting in. My issue is, I like to bring my bow to work, and I'll go bow hunting after work. I can't have my bow out in the open, right? I can't have it exposed. I leave it in the bed of my truck. Some days when the sun's not beating on it, it's okay. There are other days where the sun is beating on it. I go and touch my bow. I'm like, geez, I got to let this thing cool off before I even touch it.
And then, not to mention what do you think the effect on your string is?
It's a problem.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, a problem. I don't know, and a problem I don't know how to solve. My next option
is not easily solvable. Now, let me go back.
Would be to just park. There's like a parking spot I could park in, like a quarter of a mile down the road. I might start parking there.
Thermal protection.
And walking.
What you do is that what you can do is that you can put your bow in an aluminum, like the reflective aluminum foil, and put the bow inside and cover it. You'll take care of that.
We're going to talk about that off air. I like the sound of that.
Okay. Now, let me go back to the battery again.
Yes, please.
Well, see, because after we talk about this, you instantly know why lithium just do not work. If you just tell you. When you're dealing, say, a lithium manganese oxide battery, what's the voltage of the battery at negative 17?
I'm going to say 3.
What is the voltage of the battery at 100?
2.4?
3.3.
Ah, you got me.
So you can see that there's about 1 full volt of variance within that negative 70 to 100. And what did they say? When we talk about computers, the computer needs 3 volt to generate 3.0 and negative 3. What is the variance the majority of the computer can handle? Answer is 0.1.
So 2.9 to 3.1 it needs.
Correct.
Okay.
So if you got a true computer logic-based lighter knobs, what is your actual operational temperature? Answer is between 40 to 85, period.
Wow. And we all know that come November, we're dreaming of 40 degree days sometimes, you know? So, wow. Okay.
Now,
I'd be curious to know, for our listeners, leave a comment down below. I'd be really curious to know if any of you have found your Nox, you know, you go to shoot at an animal in the middle of hunting season and, man, what the hell? My lighted Nox didn't go on. I'd be curious to hear some stories.
That's reason any Nox that is a full computer system don't work. in low temperature or burned or no longer function after high temperature. I'll give you an example, like the original Tracer. If you leave it in your back of the car, it no longer works because your battery exceeds 100 degrees, the battery's dead. And then for the people who remember Tracer, when the temperature had dropped below 40 degrees, the knock would blink on its own because the logic cannot be held.
And was it a blinking knock in the first place?
It is a blinking knock.
Gotcha.
That's when the knock would just blink on its own and do all this.
Interesting.
And at the same time, when people tell me, Dodge, you are so old-fashioned, you are so out of date, everybody uses a new computer, they use Bluetooth on their knock. Great. Go try it.
You know, that's a great segue into the concept of newer isn't always better.
No. You said it's not new and older. You said they don't understand the fundamental of what is involved.
Right. And that's why I'm saying, like, I'm sure in the perfect scenario with the perfect temperature and the perfect weather, that I'm sure those knocks work great. Mm-hmm. But every single person listening to this podcast has expected the weather report to do one thing. And you get to the woods and it's doing something else.
Well, actually, I'll tell you a fun story. When Eastern was having problem with the first round of Tracers, back in 2007, I believe, they bought power station battery. They stored a battery on the Tracer. Of course, there's other problems, which if you're interested, I would tell you about the difference between WeSwitch and my design, why I have so many independent claims on my patent. So you can read through it. I mean, that's actually quite a fun deal. When you have a true computer logic system and the logic don't hold, it's like, imagine this, you got a calculator. When the calculator battery no longer holds, what do you got?
Paperweight.
You've got an entire screen just flickering, and then make sure you come, so I've got some lines on it, and then you got some pieces on the LCD, and then until it's nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I've had that happen to a clock before. The clock batteries are starting to run down and it's not completely dead yet, but it just flickers and, you know, some lines disappear and stuff like that. So,
right. So if you're going to light it up, what is it going to happen? That is based on logic to turn on and off.
Right. And guys, can you quickly, like very simply explain what is logic? When we're talking about computer logic, what is computer logic?
It means that you've
got
a set of procedures, the system will function. In other words, in electronic engineering called gates, when you have a certain conditions, it will happen. But in order for them to, just like, I'm going to tell you three rules. I'm going to say the rules are look left, look right, look forward. If all three happens, you turn backwards. Mm-hmm. But then I keep on telling you those things. But all of a sudden, when my power goes down, I can no longer tell you those words.
Gotcha.
So you can't hear what I said.
So it's basically
because
what
I said made no sense to you. So what can you do? Can you ever turn backwards?
No. So it's like, it's almost like a teleprompter giving someone the words to say, and all of a sudden it's missing words.
No, it's not even saying the same thing.
Not saying any words at all.
In other words, just like, you know exactly what other people mean, but the person will come by, will tell you the same thing, but not in English.
I got you. So the most basic form to say it would be it's computer language. It's the language of which
it's
computer...
a language. The computer no longer language anymore.
Gotcha. Okay. And that language.
No language, no ability to execute. Just like you may be the top runner. Now you're sick. How far can you run?
Not much at all.
Now think through this. We just talk about it. That means if you got a computer-based light or not, it's great in room temperature. But unless you use it exactly in that room temperature, there's nothing you can do.
Okay. Now, I got to be honest with you. You and I have talked about this off air. I don't need to mention the company that I'm talking about here. But I got to be honest with you. I personally have never experienced issues with a lighted knock not working. My issues have always been with the batteries. And what I mean by the batteries is the batteries coming disconnected from the knock.
Yes, that's another big deal. You need to understand, what is a lighter knock? A lighter knock is a lighter device that is able to survive a 300 miles per hour collision and survive it.
So the launch, actual flight, and withstanding
the impact.
The actual
flight is not a problem.
The impact.
It's the impact.
Yeah. And that's where my issues were. I was able to shoot it, and it worked. But when it impacted, I'd end up with batteries at the very front of my arrow in my insert.
Right now. That's a whole layer of problem with it again. If you don't use, there's a few ways to turn on something. Easiest inertia, like the original Firetail. When you launch it, the barrel foot forward, the way the battery engaged the block, it fly forward. Until you hit something, the battery disengaged, you finish the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
The engagement of a lighter knock is the most complicated process you have.
In the as far as the whole functioning of the NOC as a whole?
Because if you understand what is need to be done, because after you engage, you either engage permanently, then never at all, or else you've got a really big problem. Because if you can engage it, you can also disengage it.
Disengage it, yes.
Because remember, Newton's second law.
Which is the second object, not for every force is an equal and opposite reaction?
Correct. Now, imagine you're shooting a so-called alumina. When you push it, the knock go forward, engaged. When you impact, action and reaction, how do you prevent from not coming up? You need to increase the friction of the fit of the knot. You keep on increasing it. So that when you push it down, there's so much force and the knot got pushed forward. When you impact it, the shell of the knot have enough friction. It cannot be popped out.
So it has not enough friction that it allows the battery to engage, but enough friction that once it engages, the impact won't allow the battery to move forward again.
Correct. And at the same time, the whole idea is that you got two pieces of wire on the edge of the knot that actually touch the carbon. And the carbon is where the conductivity is.
Yes. So then if that battery comes dislodged then and ends up in the front of the arrow, does that mean that there wasn't enough friction on that knock in the first place?
No. Remember, there's nothing. Because when the aluminum brand new, the plastic was actually forced in, the battery is forced into the plastic and the plastic grab it. But when you want to replace the battery a few times, that grabbing force become an issue. And then not to mention when you're in process, that two piece of wire will put a dimple on the knock, on the shaft. As the dimple wears, what is it touching? Free space.
Gotcha.
Now, the same thing with the there's still a few different engagement systems. Now, of course, the best I have found out is acceleration switch, not accelerometer, acceleration switch, because it's a mechanical piece. Accelerometer is based on the difference of the movement of the inertia pieces. It will give you a variable. Then you use a computer to differentiate if you actually have acceleration and how much, which is a beautiful piece. But what happens when you have no logic?
It doesn't know what to do with that information?
It doesn't translate. So, or just like the one of them, like Tracer, that you put the magnet there and you swipe it. When you hold it for 4 seconds, the re-switch will not engage. Then the system turn on. Those are what? Logic. When the temperature drops, your voltage drop, what do you have? No logic.
That makes sense.
See that? See how? That's the reason most of the current light and that, like Nocturnal. It is based on nothing more than a fishing bobber. The knot go in, you push the knot will push the cap of the lightened knot bobber down. You engage it. And when you finish it, you hold it on the side with a hole, you push the cap up. Just like the way, same thing, you pull up the fishing bobber cap, the light goes off. It is a 435 battery with an LED built in with a cap as an on-off switch.
And which,
that's what it is.
And which knock is this?
That's Nocturnal and all the new ones, because which is original design come from Australia.
All right. And Nocturnal, I've used Nocturnal in the past as well. Sorry, I don't mean to be weird. I'm trying to see if I have a lighted knock in here somewhere, but I don't know where my lighted knocks were.
No, it's not important. I mean, all the listener can go online and do a search. They will find every single one of them. So any one of them, if you can use a mechanical form on the side of the knot to do a switch push down or flip or got a hole there, they're all the same design. You know the beauty of this design is?
It's easy. It's
simple.
It's easy.
It's easy.
Yeah.
You know what the manufacturing cost of this light cannot use?
I'm going to assume not very much.
0.4 cents in China.
0.4 cents for the entire NOC?
Correct. Battery and NOC combined.
And we're paying 15 for NOC?
Nobody say margin is wrong.
I guess. So we all got to make money, right?
Right. I mean, that's the reason most people don't understand. My plastic NOC costs more than the entire damn thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not wrong. Just in the way that your knocks are made in the first place.
Right. But then, now, let's go back into what FireKnock did. Remember, FireKnock, I personally understand the entire process of temperature. So unlike a normal logic, it's a fuzzy logic system. Fuzzy logic is still running on transistors. There's about 50,000 transistors on a FireKnock system. You hear me right? There's about 50,000 transistors.
But 50,000 transistors in that little circuit? Wow.
It's a VR.
Wow. Now I feel like I'm trying to find, I really don't know what happened to them. I had circuits, I had lighted knocks for my arrows. I don't know what
it's not important. I mean, you know, everybody got it. But remember, it is running on a fuzzy logic. A fuzzy logic, that means it's based on margin of change.
So this is what it is at standstill.
The C-normal logic is running on this, right? My logic is this. That means when you pass a certain threshold, you'll react.
Certain threshold of what? What type of force are we talking about?
Of the sine wave. It is not a square wave. It is a sine wave.
But
remember, in computer, is when you hit zero plus zero or one.
Sure. Now, when we talk about the change, that it senses a change.
That is, I set my change at around 0.6.
But the change, when we say it measures the change, what change is it measuring? The change in what?
The transistor change. That means, remember, transistor is a semiconductor. Semiconductor will give you an on and off, right?
Yeah.
Is it really just on and off? What happened in the middle?
I think it goes on or off. Doesn't it go to sleep, essentially?
Isn't
it always looking, not to sleep. I'm saying like a computer goes to sleep. Like it turns the screen off, but it's still waiting for the next signal.
No. You're talking physical piece now. I'm talking pure logic on a computer semiconductor.
Okay.
That's the reason it's so much more complicated when you deal with fuzzy logic. Because in fuzzy logic, it's not a true logic, which means you need a lot more variables that you need to control.
Is that why they call it fuzzy?
Yes, because it's not a clean one. When you say not clean, that means you have to worry about, okay, just like, when you got black or white, it's easy.
Yeah.
Now I tell you, this 40% of gray is good.
Yeah. Now I got to be honest with you, and I'm sure my listeners are feeling a little bit the same. I am now a certified FireKnock dealer. I've gone through the courses. I've watched the videos. I've read the science. I've watched the science. I understand how they function. This whole computer science and stuff, it is so far beyond my understanding. You know,
because
so that's
what, most people until you really, I mean, that's the reason when you say, I would say, okay, I'll give you some real background. Why is this so good? Because it is so beyond most people's comprehension. Because in order to make something work, it's all, there's just so much not understand what is needed to work. Because, just drop it on the night and shut off. Is it that simple?
No. You know, and the thing is, like, we all, at this point, anyone listening to this, and hopefully the listeners have gone to your website by now, but your website, you sign on there, says FireKnock, the science of archery, right? It's all about science, right? All of your products are based in science in one way, shape, or form. So it makes sense, right? So you have the typical, you know, the typical manufacturer, which no fault to them whatsoever. They just make something that works for the masses. When it comes to you, you say, okay, that's good, but it's not good enough.
No, and because it doesn't cover all conditions. That's the problem. It's like
so I think in order for people to understand at least why these things are so advanced, I think they need to know where FireKnock actually came from. Now, we talked about it in the very first episode of this Aeroscience series. We talked about a little bit how you had, I think it was like a defense contract of some sort.
Right, it was with Marvin Towson. It was making the instant runway for the military.
So
it's called a FireKnock, it's called the MNOC.
Yeah. So if I may summarize, if you don't mind.
No,
basically,
I don't mind.
You had a defense contract where they would be able to basically put these lights out or these lighted knocks or something similar to light up a runway anywhere in the world, no matter how hot it was. No matter how cold it was, and because they didn't know where this would be used, it needed to run in the coldest of cold, it needed to run in the hottest of hot, and it needed to function for as long as they wanted it to. Right?
At least 4 days. That was the original minimum.
Right. So this may, to listeners, this may sound very, very advanced. And to be honest with you, it is. Right?
Because remember, when you want to shoot this out, we're using an 18-gauge shotgun shell. You think an 18-gauge shotgun shell to fire it. What happened is that the first design we have, it was so funny. We end up, the lightning that comes out and we can't see it. You know why?
No.
The gunpowder burned the knock and you end up with shadow.
Was it an actual knock that
yes,
you made?
Yes, otherwise how can you see it?
That's amazing.
You burned the whole front until you turn black. You know how I solved that problem? I used the felt, the same one you use in muscle loaders to cover it. So when the fire burns, you burn on the felt, and when it comes out, it falls away, and then you hit it, the lightning light is not damaged.
That's awesome. You know, so there's a big saying, right, that I've used amongst my friends and I've heard used before, where it's like the technology of 20 years from now is being used in the military today. I don't know if it's exactly 20 years ahead.
You know, the same thing. I got a customer calling me from Germany. He is a wildlife biologist for dolphins. and you can't find a way to track it. But guess what? You think about our next system.
Yeah. You know, so again, if people don't understand, you know, the ins and outs and how it works, like an archer doesn't need to know how a computer works, right? Let's be honest. But I think
we're telling them what it is. He may not go through, but let me just give you this, right? Your average Joe is not going to make this stuff because it's just to make a fab. Give me an idea. In order to make a fire nut, I need a freaking silicon wafer. But this time it's not based on clock. This is an analog computer, which is where the fuzzy logic is.
Right.
It still went through the same process to make it. I mean, yes, I'm able to buy an 8-inch wafer, not a 12-inch. Boom, boom, the older fab. I'm not going to touch something like 28 nanometers. I will be touching 250 nanometers. I'll be happy because I'm not dealing with iPhones, you know?
Sure.
But still, somebody had to make this because that's not easy to put 50,000 transistors.
Yeah, but it's not impossible.
Yes, it sure is. And then you can stack them too.
Yeah.
It's like, by the way, the new Fina actually was using the new chip system now. You should have got links on the computer chip instead of a blob. Yeah. So it's even more reliable.
Now, what's really cool too, and I don't have the ability to show it, but I have this mat in front of me that, you know, I got from you, and it has all of the different...
Yeah, I mean, actually, you can buy the website. I'll bring one and show you.
Sure. But what I was trying to get at was the really cool thing about FireKnock that I feel like isn't offered from other companies as far as the light and Knox are concerned.
You mean this guy?
Yeah, that. So
those are all Knox, and see, those are all circuit boards.
Yes.
Those are all the match weight. Those are the four main batteries. See, that's the BU battery. That's the original Panasonic. That's 200 shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
The BL, that is the battery that will last about 3 years. That's from 40 to 180. The BL is good for negative 17 to 100, and the BX, of course, is negative 55 to 32. And then, of course, this is the cross-reference chart for the end caps. You can see that this end cap will fit all this NAC. So they are interchangeable. Yeah. And, of course, these three circuits, of course, you've got different colors.
Mm-hmm.
This is your target system, your blinking system, and your hunting system.
Yes.
You can see they all the same. Now, if you look at this background, that is the computer. And this cylinder right here, that's the activator. That's the G-switch.
Wow.
So the G-switch, that's expensive, you know. If you make the G-switch back in 2005, to make this G-switch from scratch, it'll cost you $115 each.
That's incredible.
But see, this G-switch is actually mil-spec. It's good for 12 million cycles. Because a lot of people don't understand, in order to make this, the casing is the casing is made in America. The ball is made in Israel, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then the end of the switch there is glass, and the pin tip is made of platinum. It's hermetically sealed. That means you raise it at 180 degrees, and you're using boron laser to weld this. That's the switch.
It's amazing how you could fit so much stuff into something that's so small.
No, this
it's
is nothing
incredible.
More than, in other words, this is nothing more than a sealed aluminum canister with a ball and a spring in it.
Sure.
That's what it is.
Sure.
It is a physical switch. There is no computer in it. The computer's in here.
Right.
Inside this computer, there's also called a MIM switch. The mm-hmm. MIM switch is actually how you sense anything that exceeds 15 degrees. So actually, there's a silicon edge micro machine in here.
That's amazing. So what I was getting at too, and I'm glad you brought this over because the viewers have a visual for this now, is...
But if you look at it, there's still some dots on it. See, there's different dots on here?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right here. I have it right in front of me.
I'll show you those are static charge discharger, capacitors, resistors, and so on, that you make this thing safe. Otherwise, can you kill this like they're not with static? Answer is yes. It's a Class C equipment. But I still need to protect it. Otherwise, any static is going to kill it.
Yeah. So it's got built-in protections also.
To a certain extent. And okay. See, this wire is made of 0.25 millimeter titanium wire and then gold plated. I got it done in China. See, the pin holder, that is actually made by Keystone out of New York. It's mm-hmm. the same connector they use in Apollo series. You know the one that go up to space?
Sure, Apollo. Yep.
Because you know why? Because I need the pin to be held perfectly. Because inside this connector, there's four pins like that. Holding the battery with 4 ounce pressure on all four cardinal directions. Because if the battery ever disengaged in the slightest form, there's no logic.
Right.
Not even fuzzy logic.
And it's not.
It's like with a computer. If you pull the cord, what do you got?
Nothing.
Exactly.
So, now, the really cool thing, and while you're holding it up, okay, the hunting circuit, the way the hunting circuit works is you shoot it, it turns on, and it stays on until you turn it off.
Right. That's what most people understand, but it is not that simple. I'll explain to you what will happen. When you shoot it, the G4 sensor sends 65G. Because the G4 sensor is a directional and enforced control, it's basically a canister and a ball and a spring. When you shoot it, the moment when the ball exerts 65G, the ball will be pushed on the spring all the way to touch the platinum tip. Now you've got an engagement and positivity of that you just shot this. So this is the same switch they use for missiles. Right. You know why they use for missiles?
Because they're reliable?
No, because a missile should never fire unless it was exerted a certain amount of G. Because imagine that. If somebody hit the freaking missile the wrong way, it's going to go boom.
Yeah, imagine. Then
if you've got a G4 sensor in it, like in case of missile, it's about like 6,000 G. So okay. Until you actually shoot it, it's not going to engage.
Now, the target, if I'm not, there's the hunting circuit, which remains steady at all times. And it'll stay on until you turn it off.
Let me finish this so you fully understand. Yeah, the hunting circuit, because I talked about activation, that's how all three users activate the same thing. That means as long as you shoot your arrow with 65G, that's the reason some of the customer told me, hey, Dodge, I bought your lightning now. It never worked. It never turned on. It happened to me in three separate incidents. I'll tell you all three. The first one, the gentleman was using a recurve. The recurve never reached 65G. Because the Matthew DXT is 7530-inch draw based on Gary Simons out of Matthew. That's how old that is. Will give you 850G. So 65G is a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
The second part, he said the gentleman was shooting a Matthew Q2 and cannot turn it on. Do you know why? Mm-hmm. His Q2 was 3/4 inch above center.
But where the knocking point?
Yes.
Okay.
So your force is this way.
So it's not linear. It's
not linear. The G-force did not turn on.
Okay. And the third?
The third guy, put it backwards.
Put what backwards?
No, he tried to shut off the fire knob, but keep on dropping on the point.
Oh, he couldn't turn it off.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And he kept dropping his knocker. He said, Dodge, it didn't turn on. I tried. It's over 12, 18 inches. I cannot shut off because it's a single directional switch. It can only apply force, momentum, and from one direction, plus or minus 3 degrees with 65G, or else it cannot turn on.
Which makes sense because then it can't turn off on impact.
No. It will turn off on impact.
It will turn off on impact?
Yes, it absolutely will turn on impact. Because when you shoot this arrow, or a basic arrow, if you put a switch on it as the only activator, the moment you impact it, the ball is going to rock back and forward.
Yeah,
turn on like was out of style.
I'm talking about fire knock specifically.
No, fire knock is a whole different ballgame because that's the reason I want to talk about logics. Because the fire knock, I just talked about activation. The moment you activate it, the G switch turn on and tell the system, I am now on. Mm-hmm. That's the first word. Mm-hmm. Then the system will instantly turn on the entire clockwork.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of hunting, you turn on a 6-second time delay. That means no matter what happened, you cannot turn me off within the first 6 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The target system will say, I will turn on a capacitor. In the early version of fire knock, it's turned on a digital timer. I will count 17 seconds, then I'll shut myself off. The hot blinking system, same thing. It will turn on a 6-second time delay. So the light will be solid all the way through for 6 seconds.
And then it will start blinking.
Then the fire knock system, two things goes on. Your MIM motion sensor kicks in, and your blinker kicks in. The fire knock is blinking 1,000 times on a 10,000 cycle on room temperature. Because I'm running a 10 hertz cycles in this.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're seeing is that the fire knock using 1/10 the power of the battery is doing 1,000 times on a 10,000 cycle. Now you know why the fire knock, of course, the clock is a variable clock because it doesn't have a crystal like a computer. Computer got a clock in it. This one do not. So as the temperature drops like to -3 degrees, the fire knock is running 500 cycles per second. So it's only blinking 50 times. Which explains why the fire knock computer you put in your, like my freezer, will lit for 366 days.
That's incredible. Not 365, 366.
No, I mean, my wife took it out. That for the fire knock blinking system, now we actually got a capacitor here. The capacitors adjust to hold the battery for 1/9 of a second. So 1.8 seconds, and then you blast the light in that 0.2 seconds. which explains why the final blinking light can be seen up to 2.5 miles in total darkness.
2.5 miles?
Yeah, 2.5 miles. And of course, the finite target system, as I say, is a simple digital system in the early version, or the capacitor system. It's average about 17 seconds, it shut itself off.
Okay. So can you talk? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. You got all those systems, is great. So how do you prevent it from shutting off after you shut it? That's the key.
Yeah. Keeping it lit.
Talk about the logic system, we turn it on, right? We put a 6-second time delay in it. So what happened after you shot it? The deer start running into the woods and bouncing over the tree. Wouldn't it shut off? Because when you bounce, when you hit something, the sideways impact, although at, say, 300 G, the resulting force to the G-string can exceed 65 G. Because remember, they are talking vectors. So for people who are not familiar with angles, your geometries, I'm sorry, but this is what we're boiled down to.
Is that also because it's directional? The force needs to be in a certain direction for it to...
No, it's not just... But remember, when you apply enough, the resulting vector can exceed. So if I do say, opposite 200 G, you can turn the 65 G the other way because action and reaction. And then if I apply, say, remember, sine 45 degrees, 0.7071. That means if you apply 70% power towards an angle, you have the same result at the center.
Right.
You just have to increase it significantly. So whatever you have 300 G at 45 degrees, you end up with the same as a 40, as around, no, no, sorry, 180, 245 degrees will have the same as 65 G going forward.
Okay.
Because it's angle. It's made of angle. Yeah. I mean, your sine and cosine kick in now. So how do you prevent it from shutting off? Say the deer is now got your arrow on it. It did not go a pass through. It's now running through the woods, touching and hitting every single tree. How did it not shut off? That's the reason I added a motion sensor in it, which is nothing more than a regroup single circle micro machine on the IC. So anytime when this thing moves more than 15 degrees, on single axis, because remember, on a single axis, you can go in like this. It's still this axis. So if it moved, I reset the timer.
Okay.
So it's always protected by 6-second time delay.
And it's always thinking. The computer is always thinking.
Reason, when you don't use a fire knock, take the freaking battery out. The battery.
And that's what I meant when I said it's like a computer going to sleep.
It is a computer.
The computer doesn't go to sleep. The computer shuts off.
The fire knock never sleeps. The only thing you didn't see is that it didn't use the light. The light is the biggest user of power.
Gotcha.
It still uses power because you need to maintain the all the logic and maintain all the switch. They all have to be powered.
Okay.
Now,
go ahead.
I
was going to say, the cool thing about FireKnock 2 is, are there different color lights or do you only offer one color?
54 colors of light.
Yeah. So you can choose the color that the circuit lights up. You can match it with whatever color knock you want, right?
All right.
Now, we know that the best combination is going to be some combination of red, right? Red on red, red on orange, red on clear.
No, red on clear is not good.
Really?
Actually, red on clear is very bad. Let me explain to you why. Because most of the customer businesses have driven in the cars. Imagine somebody broke a tail light. When they hit the stoplight, what do you got? You got a stoppers. Guess what? It's red on clear. You got stoppers. So you need to contain the light within the light. That's the reason on stoplights, you notice the light bulb is actually red, not clear.
I did not notice that, no.
No, when you replace it, you'll find out that most of the stoplight light bulb itself is always painted red.
Okay.
Clear, you end up with stoppers again. Oh. Because you want to contain the light. So if you do not contain the light, you end up with a burst of light that you say about a foot wide. So when do you hit? You saw a burst of light going to the deer. Where do you hit? Well, you see the burst of light. You see front, back, middle, center, up, long. You have no idea.
Right.
You want to see a dot hitting it.
Exactly.
That's the reason you need that lens. The lens is the knot.
Right.
That's the reason for most people. Now, that's not true for most people's eye. If you use green, I mean, anytime you move away from red and orange, you can deal with clear because it's not a dominant light. Of course, red, see, the funny thing is that as the night goes really into the night, the red is less capable of watching.
It's less visible.
The blue is better.
Okay, so the darker. See, I was just having a conversation with a buddy of mine. He was in the Marines, I don't know, 5 years ago, I think. And they told them that that red, they didn't like using red in the Marines. They preferred to use, I forget what color it was.
Green or blue is always the best.
Yeah, but that's in true darkness, you're saying. The darker it is, the better green or blue is going to be.
Green is always better for most people with no color blind. Blue is piercing. That means if you are lucky and see somebody got a ticket in the middle of moonless light, the red don't show up. The only thing that you see is blue, not even the clear.
Okay.
Give you a crash course on light, okay? The headlight for most cars is a million lux.
Much better.
Okay. A normal headlight will give you about a million lux. Your taillight is about 6,500 lux.
Is that like lumens?
Lumens.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, lumens and lux is different, but I can just use one. But unless you're really into it, you really don't need the value of measurement. Because lumens and lux are different values. At a million lux, if you're driving in daytime, you saw somebody turn their headlight and you drive by, do you notice it? Answer is no. Because white lights are only good for one thing and one thing only. You shine on something and look for reflection.
Got it.
If you are using a white light and it is a lighting up on lens and on knocks and light, do you know your observation ability of the lighting up is?
Not good.
2.5%. That means if you spend energy to give it about 160 lux, you have the visibility of 3 lux. If you have used on red color with red lens, you got the whole 160.
That's amazing. Yeah, because right now, the signature arrow that we're running, it has if people want lighted knocks, they can, or lighted knocks, obviously we'll install the circuits and all that stuff. But right now we have green knocks on our arrows.
Right. Now, green knock have one problem. Green knock, you can use green knock with a red LED. It will still give you reasonable light.
Yep.
But green will block some of, remember, green is a combination of yellow and blue.
Mm-hmm.
It will knock a few of the red pigments off, the yellow light off. But then everybody say, I see green better. I say, no, you don't understand what you're talking about. You only see green better when there is no competition of white light or any light. Hold your bow up, for most vertical bow shooter. Hold your bow up and then drop the bow down until the sun shines on your sight pins. You'll find out that you can no longer see blue, you can no longer see green, you can no longer see yellow. The only light you see that's light up is red.
Is the red.
Because red is the only light that can compete with all other colors. And the first color that goes away, if there's any competition, is white. The second color go away competition is blue, yellow, or green. Orange and red always maintained.
So if I wanted to offer, it might make more sense to switch to orange knocks then.
Orange knock use more power than red.
What do you mean?
Orange is good for peripheral. That means if you are seeing on the corner of your eye, just barely sense it. Orange is great.
I'm not talking about when it comes to the lighted system, we're probably only going to offer the red lights unless someone's colorblind.
Well, orange is okay.
Like that.
I mean, you can use orange, but remember one thing. Orange is always better for peripheral vision.
Okay.
I didn't make this up. Go and look at your car. What do your side signal light color is?
The blinkers are
orange.
Yellow. Orange, yeah.
Because you want to sort of sense it but not see it. But what is the light that you have to see immediately?
Red.
Red.
Yeah.
Those are your tail lights.
Wow.
What is the light you need to see and reflect?
White.
Yeah. The headlights.
Gotcha.
Now, why is green light so much better for the evening hunt? Because there's no competing light. So this is what you want to do. Red light all day long. Orange light for Africa because the background is orange. For any time when you saw your background, remember, it's a light, not a color. That's where most people don't understand. When you mix all the color, you end up with black. You mix all the color of light, you end up with white.
Yes.
Now you need to understand when you need light, you need to think contrast. So if I'm hunting turkey, it's either red or green. But green is not going to be great the moment when the sun comes at 12 o'clock or your green disappeared. Now, the moment the sun passed 2 o'clock, your green is going to be one of the better ones. If you hunt, say, in the deep woods, well, the blue is going to come in and have a handy portion. But the blue is the absolute best when you want to hunt pigs in Texas under the moonless light. Green is your better choice.
Got it. So I want to end with this question. I know we've gone a little bit over what you wanted to. I know you wanted to get out of here. But I know I've been asked this question before. I know people are going to ask me this question. So I'm just going to jump ahead of it and I'm going to ask you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
if there are people out there who, you know, they go out and buy whatever lighted nock they want, right? They put it on mm-hmm. their bow, they put it on their arrow, they shoot their arrow, it goes where they want it to go, it hits the target, it works almost all the time, right? Mm-hmm. What reason do they have to look into fire nock nocks?
It's pretty much the same reason that you buy insurance. In normal days, everything works. When you absolutely need it to work, well, mm-hmm. then you buy fire nock.
Yeah.
Or why do you buy an SUV with off-road capability? Most people never did. But when the moment you need it to work, I'm the only one who guaranteed to work.
Yeah. I mean,
it doesn't mean that if you buy the most expensive SUV, doesn't mean you never got stuck. That's sure. life.
Yeah. And I mean, I have all-terrain tires on my truck. It's very rare that I'm in the mud, but I have it for when I am, you know, mm-hmm. and honestly, it hurts my gas mileage. My gas mileage has gone down like 9 miles per gallon since I put those mm-hmm. things on. You know, but I have them for when I need them.
So you can see, right tonight, it's not that simple, is it, Wire?
No. You know, and if I may summarize this episode for everyone, because as much as we try to not be technical with this series, I think of all of the topics that we've covered so far, it was impossible to not be technical with the lighted nocks.
Unfortunately, I haven't even gone into the real technical side. This is the basic scratch of surface. But then you understand why the finance system is so expensive in the case.
Yes.
But to be fair on you, it's actually the cheapest if you really know what we put it in.
Yeah, because that was the next thing I was going to say. And I was going to kind of end with that. The truth is, and I've heard it from a lot of people, fire nock nocks are a little bit more expensive than the other nocks on the market. But what you get from them, the ability to choose the color light you want, the ability to choose the color nock you want, the ability to change the circuit and what type of light is in it, the ability to choose the battery to fit your needs. It is a truly customizable lighted nock. It's not just something you go to the store, you buy one off the shelf, and you get what you get.
Hello, are you still here?
You can absolutely choose whatever combination you want for the system. That in itself, to me, is worthwhile. Think about people who go out and customize their vehicles. Right, they want to paint this color.
That's still minor because I want to end this podcast with one.
But
the finance system are good for, first of all, they are actually good for 30,000 shots. That's excluding the 12 million cycles. And we offer you a lifetime unconditional refresh policy. That means as long as you own finance, I don't care what happened to it. You can send it back $10. I give you a new circuit and new knock.
Really?
Unconditional for life. It's another warranty. Or 3 for $25. That means if you started your finance in the vertical bow world, and say 15 years later, you move to crossbow, you can actually send the circuit back and do a side grade.
That's amazing.
I know, because see, when I started the final in 2006, I asked myself this question. What do I want in a warranty? It's a 30-day unconditional. That means within 30 days, I don't care what happened. I'll mm-hmm. make sure it works or you got my money back. End of story.
Mm-hmm.
But after that thing is going to happen, you already bought the FireNock. You know how good it is. You're going to buy battery from me regardless. You're going to get end caps. You're going to buy knocks. So why not just take up your circuit for the rest of your life? Which I did. That means you've got a circuit board in your hand. You go to our warranty page, print up the refresh policy. It's $1 or $10, shipping included. And I'll give you a knock of your choice. You can pick any color, any function, any knock.
That's amazing.
Or 3 for $25, regardless of condition. That means as long as you give me a circuit board, I can see the G-switch. That's bad.
George, I got to be honest with you. I wish I would have known this. Not now. Now I know.
No,
you
it's on a warranty. It's on every single page.
I know. I never read it. You know how many circuits I've thrown out in the past?
Do you know how
that's 100% on me. But guys, I don't think you're understanding what George is saying here.
12 million cycles.
George is saying here that his system, his knock, he knows for sure it is more expensive than what's already on the market. But what he's trying to tell you is his warranty makes it so you only have to pay that difference in price once. Once you pay for the very first set of circuits, the replacements cost just as much as going out and buying a new 3-pack, if not less than going out and buying a 3-pack from other companies. So you pay the difference up front once, and you save on the back end. That's amazing.
I mean, the warranty had not changed. Go to find out under warranty. There's a full refresh policy in PDF. You fill it in, do your work. You've got everything.
That's incredible. So I don't want to take too much time on this because we really are over. But we never touched on the end caps. Now the end cap, just to really quickly, it kind of brings everything together, right? It stops the battery.
You just need to look at fire knock just like a flashlight. What do you got on a flashlight? You got the lens, right? Mm-hmm. On the front. Mm-hmm. That's your knock.
Yep.
You got the switch and your light bulb. That's your circuit board. You've got your casing. Well, that's your arrow. You got a battery. So what's left? You need something to hold the battery. That's the end cap. That's the end cap. It's nothing different.
Now, the cool thing about the end cap also, and honestly, we've talked about this before. This is the reason I even went to Fire Knock in the first place, is because it stops. It protects the battery. It protects the front of the arrow from the battery if there's ever a failure. Here's my question for you. Let's say someone is listening to this and they say, you know, sounds like a great product, but I've been using Luminoc, I've been using Nocturnal, I've been using this Leyden Knock for years, and I'm happy with it. But I would like the end cap for protection. Can somebody use your end cap with a different Leyden Knock?
Answer is yes or no. You have now to make your own end cap too, because I don't know the depth. You had to protect. Remember, this is the same thing as a bowling ball in your trunk. If you're able to control the bowling ball, it's no big deal, it's in a trunk. The moment you do not control the bowling ball, it's bouncing everywhere. You don't have a trunk anymore.
Gotcha. Okay, so that makes sense.
In other words, you can use my end cap on any Leyden Knock that using a battery. But the problem is that you now have to make your own measurement and install it at the precise depth. And it cannot be plus and minus 1 millimeter. End of story. Because anything more than that, you might as well not have it.
Okay, that makes sense. So guys, that pretty much, like Dorge said, we could go into more technicalities for this stuff, but I don't know that this is the podcast for that, right? But today we learned about how regular Leyden Knocks work. To be honest with you, the manufacturing process is more towards the knock side of things than the lighted side of things, which we covered in the last episodes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So today we talked about traditional Leyden Knocks, the different styles or how they function, and some of the issues, not even in the way that they're built, but simply the limitations based on the batteries they use and the system that they use to turn them on and turn them off, right? And then we talked about the benefits of the Fire Knock and how it works, why it's different than the standard. I think that's more than enough to
keep this story with you a hint.
Yes.
Very simple thing. Do you know an ordinary old car, when you first come out on the switch on turn and on it, put it on and off on the window, the switch, when Ford, GM all got it, how much is that switch?
Like cost-wise?
When you went to buy it, till you broke one.
Couldn't tell you.
In the 1990 or 2000, you can get one for maybe $40. Now you break one of your Porsche, your Mercedes-Benz, your BMW. Not that they're expensive. How much does that cost? About $200, if you're lucky. It's just a switch. Or is it just a switch?
But it's a necessary switch.
That's where all the magic is. Everything is simple until you really
I lost you here it. For a second.
And I'll end it right there.
There you are. You came back. I lost you there for a second.
I say everything is simple until you really dig into it. It is not that simple. It is very complicated.
Yeah.
He actually got his own computer in each of the freaking switch.
That's incredible.
I'm just make something on and off. It's not that simple. Just look at your light switch, your home light switch. We can get one for $150. And look, it's more complicated when you can pay $80 for a single light switch. If you don't know what you're buying, I can't help you.
Yeah.
Stick with the $1.50 one.
That's fair. And I've said this before. I'm sure it's not going to be the last time we say it on these podcasts, but you can't understand the benefit of something until you understand the problems that it corrects.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to a Leyden Knock, let's face it, there's only two reasons, maybe three, that people are going to use a Leyden Knock. One, they want to know where their shot goes when they make impact. Two, they want, if it doesn't fully pass through the deer, they want to be able to use that Leyden Knock to follow the deer through the woods. And three, if you're out target shooting or competition shooting or whatever, you want to be able to know how good your shot was before the next person gets to shoot. And let's face it, if your knock doesn't turn on when you need it to turn on, why are you even going in the woods with a Leyden Knock in the first place?
Yeah, and if your knock is not perfect with your string, why are you even bothering with it?
Exactly. You know, so I think that's a great place to end this podcast today. Dorge, I want to thank you so much for joining us. This was a plethora of information. And again, to the listeners, I want to apologize. It was probably a little more technical than maybe you wanted to hear, but there's no way to talk about computers and programming without getting a little technical. I really hope we did a good enough job that you guys were able to understand what we're talking about. If not, just reach out to us. Let us know. You can reach Dorge at the Fire Knock website. You can reach me either on our Instagram, wingandtail.outdoors, or you can email me at wingandtail.chris@gmail.com. However you guys want to do it, thank you so much for reaching out. We really appreciate it. And remember, if you guys would like what you heard today, send it to a friend, share the information. We're here to educate the archery industry. That's our number one priority with this series. If you like what you heard, leave a review down below. Remember, if you guys are interested in Truth Sticks arrows, if you leave a comment and a 5-star review down below, I'm going to cover your shipping right now. If you follow us on Instagram, I'm going to take $5 off of that, the price of the arrows. And if you follow us on YouTube, I'm going to take another $5 off. So depending on where you are in the country, that's anywhere from a 20 to a 25, maybe even $30 savings on a dozen arrows. You can't beat it. Either way, I want to thank you again for joining us today for another episode of the Wing and Tail Boys. And until next time, remember, success is just a commitment away. Have a great day.